When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Don't Nearly View system, Diolis. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Wales in real trouble here, although they're lucky to get that loose ball. Gibbs with the thrust. Robert Jones, nicely out to Emir Lewis. Emir Lewis is checked it. Up goes Yayan Evans. Yayan Evans is away. Can the Welsh captain make it? He's going to do it. And it's a try for Wales. And the Welsh captain has scored his 8th and his 33rd international.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Attacking Scrum podcast. It's a cruel old game, rugby. Just when we'd managed to nurse ourselves out of the Grand Slam defeat a fortnight ago, we get a weekend like this where all four of the regions crash out of Europe, three of which in pretty heartbreaking fashion, and one absolute hiding for the Scarlets as well. So it's thrown us... another, I'd say, almighty curveball. But luckily, Dan Killick is stepping up to the mark tonight, aren't you, Dan? You're going to be pulling the strings as question master.
I am, Jed. I've got a shirt on, a pen in hand, and I'm fully armed and ready.
Yeah, this is it. This is exactly what we need on a weekend like this. And the mighty Murph is with us as well. I'm sure he's raring to go. How are you, Murph?
Very well, thanks. Yeah. Well, I mean, rugby aside, all's good. Yeah.
Bloody hell. I mean. I don't know where to begin. Let's hand over to you, Dan. You've got the reins today, mate. It's all yours. Steer this car crash.
Yeah, well, I think a point that Greg Sherrington made, which is it's more of a statement, really, is pro teams need serious help and support. I think that's a nice open-ended question there. So who fancies having a run at that first off?
Jed does.
I will, because for all the maudlin tones on that introduction, I do think there's a little bit of context with these performances that I think we've got to take into account. Full disclosure, I haven't seen the full Scarlets game, thank God, judging by the highlights. But I think you've got to take each result on its own. And the Ospreys and Cardiff should have won those games. They had them sewn up. They should have put them to bed. And I think the Ospreys, there was enough experience on that field to close it out, and they'll be kicking themselves. Cardiff, ditto. You know, when you're spending large chunks of the game, it's 14, 13 men, you've got to put the side to the sword. And that was a good enough side to beat London Irish, even if 15 had stayed on the pitch. So they will both be kicking themselves. But it's not like they took a hammering off either of them. You know, they were, I think that's what makes it worse in a way, is they were very, very close. Dragons, I thought, played very well, and they've just ran out of puff, as they have done the last few weeks, actually. They've put in some really, really good performances, particularly up until about the 60, 65-minute mark, and then they've kind of struggled to close things out, which, you know, is understandable. And then, obviously, Scarlets have just been completely outplayed across the whole of the fixture. But I would say, right, if you took this game, if these games were kind of 18 months ago, or these fixtures were 18 months ago, 2 years ago, when, some of the previous coaches were in charge, I don't think, you know, the Ospreys under Alan Clark wouldn't have got close to them. I don't think, I just don't think they were a particularly well-drilled side. I think the Ospreys have made really good strides, and that's why they'll be kicking themselves, is because they had an opportunity to win that game. And I think, to be honest, had an opportunity to go on a really good run in that cup. Cardiff, ditto. Cardiff under Mulvihill, I think, would have lost that game anyway. I do think they're moving in the right direction, but that again, they'll be kicking themselves. So it's unfortunate that two of those have happened at the same time. The Dragons 2 years ago, the Dragons under Jackman wouldn't have been anywhere close to giving Northampton a game. So although it's really, really frustrating for those three teams, I still think they're in much better nick than they have been for a while.
Yeah, they were three. There's three very close games, weren't there? With Dragons, Ospreys, and Cardiff Blues, and then you've got the Scarlets as a bit of a that is a hammering that particular game, isn't it? But do you think it's there's quite a lot of overreaction then? Because I mean, a lot of the listeners' questions this week are very much doom and gloom. But as you point out there, there's some great rugby on display and some close games. But of course, we lost.
I think the three sides in the Challenge Cup are much better than they were 12 months ago. And I think the Scarlets is the concerning one, because they've got a really good squad, and that was a really good side out there, and they've been absolutely pasted. So that's the concern, I would say. But again, the annoying thing is we see so much meaningless rugby in the Pro 14 that it's only when it comes to Europe that you get a chance to see how good any of these sides are, really. And I think that's the problem, is they've all come up short in one weekend. But I don't think it's as bad as Twitter suggests. Keen to hear what Murph reckons.
Well, it's like in Welsh rugby fans' nature to be either completely cock-a-hoop or doom and gloom. And especially, in this kind of Twitter era where everyone loves to kick the regions, it's pretty much like a campaign against them among certain people to just have a go with every opportunity, which, if you want to, whatever. But the Scarlets one, it's difficult to say which is worse, because the Scarlets were just beaten within minutes of the game starting. You could see they were going to get done. And in some ways, that's easier to take than being in front with 4 minutes to go and cocking it up like Blues did. But the Scarlets, they're up against Sale. I actually called the Scarlets as winners last week, but as soon as I saw the team sheet with Faf de Klerk playing, I knew I was going to die on his ass. There were six South Africans on the pitch and two on the bench for Sale. So I don't know. I mean, obviously, good for you, But I don't know what benefit it is to... It's high standards of rugby, but I don't think any benefit to the national team over there. Like, Tom Curry's in the side. And Bill Beaumont's son, I nearly called him Bill Beaumont. Bill Beaumont's son, Josh. And McGuigan, I think, has had a cap on the wing for him. I couldn't pick out any other English players. I mean, there obviously are some, but none that have got any recognition. It seemed to me like a load of South Africans who know they're not going to get in the South African team, but are still easily test standard. Mm. And they've all ended up, lots of them, they've spread all over the world, but a lot of them have ended up in the Sale side. And they kind of just played like Saracens would, just smashed the Scarlets at every opportunity. And
just pure power, weren't they?
And I tell you, who catches my eye before I'll speak about the Cardiff game, is this Aka van der Merwe, the hooker. A while ago, he wasn't, a season ago, he wasn't entirely drilled as a hooker. His throwing in was all over the place. Technically, he was not there, but they recognised the athletic ability in him, and he's probably as good as any hooker in Europe right now on that performance yesterday. Were you going to say something then, Jed?
I was just going to tell Dan to move a bit closer to his computer, actually. But look, I think there's a lot of sense in that, Murph, like, especially what you're saying about it's either, the sublime to the ridiculous, either we need to kill all the regions or they should all be funded, 50 million. I just think there's room for a bit of nuance in all of this. And actually, you do have to look at the budgets between the individual regions. There's, that's why the Scarlets result is so worrying, is because actually they've got a decent playing budget to be. And that's why they have been competitive in Europe. And they've generally spent that money well and recruited well. And we've covered all this a million times. Mm. The other sides, I think that's the frustrating thing on yesterday's or the weekend's performances, is it's not like the Ospreys were beaten by Bath or someone, you know, who you know has got a big playing budget, or Harlequins or anyone like that. You know, I think Newcastle and London Irish, you know, my guesses are probably not at the higher end of the spenders in that league. But that said, I really enjoyed the rugby. Like, there were some brilliant tries. They were cracking games. I would much rather watch, I mean, I say that now, that all of them stung at the time. But it's so good to watch games that go into the last, you know, go into the last and you don't know who's going to win it. You know, it was just, they were all really, really exciting, the Challenge Cup games.
Yeah. The Cardiff one, though, I mean, obviously I'm from this neck of the woods, so I guess I'm a bit biased, but it was so stupid. I mean, I know they obviously they're young men and all this, but once the penalty was awarded, just to the left of the post, not directly in front, but to the left, sort of say 15-yard line or whatever, the only thing you needed then was the clock. The clock was what you had to kill because you knew you were going to be in front.
Yeah.
Even if you lost the ball or got intercepted or whatever, you're coming back for that penalty. So before you went back to that penalty, what you wanted to kill then was the clock. And in doing that, you've killed the game. But as soon as the penalty's awarded, they went straight to Jared Evans and he put it in the post.
Yeah.
Which meant there was all the time in the world left for London Irish to exploit Cardiff's defence, which had been shite all day.
Yeah.
There was in a few of the games, I'm talking about regionals now, a few of the games, it was defensive shape. It's like as if all teams, I know the weather played a part, but all teams are suddenly playing open rugby all over the place now. And it seems as if, because there's been so much turgid rubbish going on, in especially in the, well, across all the UK, really, that teams have forgotten how to number up and drift. So you look at the back line when they got possession, you pick your man, and then you just drift as the ball. And they seem to forget that altogether. And then with Cardiff in particular, it was just straight up missed tackles as well.
The Cardiff game, yeah, there was missed tackles, but you're right. The thing that was mad for me is there was ones where you were just running through gaping, you know, they were running through gaping holes that they weren't even close enough to miss the tackles.
No, and the commentator said that they only Munster have conceded fewer tries in the Pro 14 season, which had just finished. That was like the kiss of death because all of a sudden there was massive gaps everywhere. And, you know, like in that particular game, there were just straight up missed tackles, but there was also huge defensive shape errors, which caused, you know, spaces everywhere. So, I mean, great for the neutral, but they still should have won, even though they didn't defend well and all the other things they did wrong. They still should have won. They just had to, if they just picked and go'd for, five more times, that would have killed a minute. Then when you go back for the penalty, you do an Owen Farrell and take a lifetime to kick it. And then when London Irish eventually kick off, you've got about 30 seconds to kill. All you've got to do is catch it, fall
two
over.
Two phases, bang.
Put it into touch and you're in the next round, which based on the form of this game, they would have got stuffed in the next round anyway. But still, you know, I don't know how it works now, but they've all got a long wait now for the Rainbow Cup.
This is the mad thing, actually, is I was looking at it thinking, right, well, what the hell are we going to talk about next week? Because there's no pro side, hasn't got a game for weeks now.
I was just thinking to myself, maybe we'll talk about Callum Sheedy and whoever else plays for Bristol, but they've been dumped out as well.
They've been dumped as well, yeah.
Yeah. So that leaves Faletau and Rhys Priestland. Not much.
Yeah, we'll be. I don't know. Maybe it'll be the time to unleash a bit of the Lions chat. But where are we heading this week, Dan? You're in control. Where do you want us to go now?
Yeah, I just wanted to go back to to Murph a moment on the Cardiff game. Murph, who was the standout performer for Cardiff?
Oh my God! Do you know what? There's been so much rugby in between then and now. It feels like it was 2 weeks ago. It was only 2 days ago. 3 days ago.
There's a nice clip with Seb Davis floating around, wasn't it?
Of course, yeah, yeah. But that's the kind of thing he's had all along. He, you know, when he first came into the side, he's had that kind of sort of footballing ability, which is more akin to a back rower than a second rower. And it's the other side of his game that I'm assuming he's been asked to work on, you know, the tight work. I mean, it was special, though, to spot your winger like that. Someone else did it. Oh, Ellis.
Elliot had a crack as well, didn't he? Yeah.
I've never seen Elliot D running that fast.
I didn't know who it was. I didn't have my specs on. I looked at it and I could just about see it with those silly shirts on. I was just about to see a two on his back. And I was like, who's it? Inside centre, is it? He was absolutely flying, to be fair.
He was. I never knew he had that in him because he's obviously normally doing all the tight work, you know. And then he kicks it because Wainwright looks like he's got the pace on everyone and it bloody goes out. But, you know, Seb Davis, yeah, there must be someone else who caught my eye. I'd have to watch it again now. Yeah. I still got four Champions Cup games. Is that what we're calling it now? European Championship?
European Cup games and
two Challenge Cup games on my TV that I haven't seen yet. So, but I have watched all the Welsh ones. I just can't remember anything about. To be honest, it was one of those a little bit like Wales and the Grand Slam decider. The game finishes, and you just switch it off and forget it even happened.
The problem was, I did that on Friday night, and then the same bloody thing happened in the two following games. Like, they were like identical games. Like, the Welsh side takes a big lead, the English side comes back into it, then they get another big lead, then they come back in, then there's some kind of yellow and red cards going on, and then you lose it towards the end. It was like having to relive the bloody Grand Slam game, but... Three times.
All three games are like that, weren't they?
Yeah.
With the cards and then the, yeah.
Jed, anyone stand out for you in the from Dragons, Ospreys, Blues? I just want to see if who stood out for the Welsh boys.
That's the thing, is I think in those Challenge Cup games, there were some really good performances that are worth looking at. We just mentioned Elliot had a really good game. Moriarty had a great game for the Dragons, really strong. Let's see who else. Nye Owen had another good game in the centre. He's really playing well. Jordan Williams had like a really good for so long. He's been kicking the ball and having the occasional run, and he seemed to make the right decision most of the time throughout the game. I thought, you know, it was a good mixture of putting boot to ball and taking them on, and Northampton did look worried when he was going. So there's quite a few in the Dragons game. Ospreys, Morgan Morris was outstanding at eight. He's a real threat. I think he's got a lot about him, and we might revisit this later on in the podcast, but I know we're talking about kind of development side, or, you know, who might play for Wales if we have a fixture over the summer. And I think that's looking a bit more likely now, supposedly. No idea against who or where, but if that is the case, I think, you know, given that we've got no depth at eight and Toby will be away with the Lions, he's the kind of player you're going to want to have a look at along with Wainwright. So there were some excellent performances in there, actually. And I think, yeah, we've got to have a look at that. I'll tell you what as well, I think, you know, we've spoken about him loads on this pod, but I thought Luke Price had a good game for the Ospreys. It was...
On his 50th cap?
Yeah, he looked a lot more. I think, you know, these last few games where he's been playing, he's obviously recovered his confidence. I think that leg break must have taken so much out of his confidence. And he came back and he played. He had a stinking season when he came back, didn't he? And I thought he played really well. He looked, you know, he looked really good at getting the back line going. And Kieran Williams outside him again, he's always a threat. So look, there were lots of good individual performances in there. It's just annoying that... You know, if one of those sides had converted the leads into a win, I don't think we'd be as downbeat, because there was lots of good stuff in there.
Yeah, some super entertaining rugby then. So Rob Thomas has put this question to you. 4 years ago, the Scarlets won the league, not just yesterday, but how come the overall decline? Because it's a pretty big one, isn't it?
Do you want to take that, Murph?
I don't know they're budget wise they're coping better than the other regions, so I don't know if it is that much of a decline or just the rest of the league moving on money wise, I haven't checked what the figures are on players' salary budgets or anything across the sides and compared to other the other countries, Scotland and Ireland, but it is, I mean, even the Italian teams have got bigger budgets than we have. That's why they get these tidy fourth-rate South African second rows who are absolutely bloody brilliant playing for them. We just can't afford those type of players. So
they've got a good squad, though, haven't they, Murph, the Scarlets? They've got a good amount of depth. And
yeah,
they should do better.
Well, I think they would against anyone. I mean, I think they caught sail on their hottest ever performance, not ever, but hottest performance under this. Someone on TV said in the last few seasons they haven't played that well. So probably against any other opposition, they would have been okay yesterday. Not necessarily won, but not so badly humbled, if you know what I mean. And I don't know. Only Leinster in the Pro 14 would do that to anyone. So listen, like everything with sport, is never as bad as you think, and it's never ever as good as you think either. So the only issue now is there's no games for us. Mm-hmm. There's no games for any of the teams to show that they're not that bloody useless. So they'd always, as things stand with minimal budgets, they're always going to play second fiddle. It's just a matter of how far second fiddle. And I still think that if we get even close to our rivals, especially over the border, if we get anywhere close to their level of budget, we do better, because we churn out much more naturally gifted halfbacks from our academies and backs in general. And I think when and if ever the money comes into this, the salary budgets of the regions, all they need to do is strengthen their front fives and maybe the back rows, and they can just augment their back line slightly and maybe be competitive with all of them, I think. Not all of them, most of them.
So, Jed, on the Scarlets, there seems to be quite a lot of discontent with the fans, with number of players leaving in the summer, and a couple, you know, big signings, question marks over the recruitment, coaching's being questioned. They're not happy down west, are they?
I think if you've got a squad that big, you're going to lose players over the summer. And I think, you know, if you look at them individually, I mean, who's going? I think Kasim's going, who I know he's a fan's favourite, but he's, you know, he's kind of had his 3 years, and they've got so many back rowers there that it's no surprise to see him go, I don't think. And a couple of the second rows are going. Obviously, I think that's probably the area of concern, because Ball's going, Retiva going, and someone else possibly. So I think that's probably the area of concern. And like we said, that's one of the hardest areas to recruit. And I don't know whether that's so much the concern. Losing Jack Moore is a massive concern, because he's, you know, we covered this in previous weeks. He's just an absolute dynamite player. So that, I think, is a concern. But I can see, I think you said it there, Dan, it is a good squad, and they should be getting a better tune out of it. So that leads you to think that the coaching is has not had the impact that you'd want it to have. And to go to back to the kind of the decline, I suppose there was the Pivac era where they had that success. The following season was weird, because he'd already been given the Wales job, and it must have affected him, because, you know, it's the whole kind of lame duck presidency thing, isn't it, where, you know, you're on the way out and there's not necessarily that much you can do. And they had horrible injuries that season. Then you had Brad Moore for a season, just as he's starting to make his mark, he's moved on. And then you've had Delaney now for a kind of interrupted season. So it's tricky. I can see why there's a bit of grumbling. But yeah, they've got to do a bit of shifting around of that squad over the summer to get them in decent nick for the next season. I mean, I don't know if Pro 14 rugby ever ends, does it, with Pro 14, Rainbow Cup, Pro 16. I think we seem to go on forever and ever. But yeah, it's definitely a few things that they need to work on. But the biggest concern is the coaching, because if that isn't working, then none of the rest is going to fall into place.
They want to get Delaney upstairs, don't they?
Do you think?
Yeah.
I mean, that's... Yeah. Do you think that's a good move? Or?
Well, yeah, I would say, yeah, shift him upstairs, and then bring in, obviously, bring in a coach then, the Skinner. They seem to have lost their way in the way in which they're playing. The patterns seem a bit off. You know, a lot of the basics don't seem right, and players don't seem like they really want it. But clearly, that's not a good thing to say, is it? Because they're obviously professional players. They do want it. They're obviously just not happy with something, whether it's the systems or what they're being told to do. So I think there does seem to be, from you know, from the perspective of looking in, that there's an issue, potentially an issue there with the coaching setup.
I think the other thing that was, again, I don't know how much truth there was in it, but there was that kind of tug of war thing over Dwayne Peel that cropped up a few weeks ago. And, you know, he supposedly, there was a, well, it was a done deal going to Cardiff, but then supposedly Scarlets were trying to hijack it. I don't know how much truth there is in that. But again, it leads you to believe that they needed, you know, they wanted some kind of freshening up in the coaching staff. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. The thing is, like, right now, it's not going to change now. And, you know, we all thought Wayne Pivak was hopeless over the autumn. And then, you know, he's gone and won a championship. So things can change quickly. So I suppose it's now they've got to go out and put together a good campaign in this Rainbow Cup thing.
Yep. Okay, so here's a bit of a deep one.
should we take a break before we do the deep one?
Yeah, definitely needed.
Deep breath. We'll be back after this. Right, you promised us a deep one, Dan. Where are we heading?
We're going into the depths here. So, get the snorkel on, the diving gear. We're going in. Greg Sherrington is putting this one out there. Do the pro clubs need to break away from union control now to force the splitting of the amateur and pro game, thus hopefully ensuing they have adequate funding to act, at least to build squads and challenge in the competition? Murph's run out of the room, I think, is he?
Yeah, this is definitely a politics question, which is
definitely
not my forte and is definitely more Jed's cup of tea.
You're definitely a lot closer to a Welsh rugby club than I am, though, aren't you? So, you know,
that's a good point. That's a very good point. I'm quite high up in my rugby club.
Well, exactly,
which is not a very, it doesn't bode well for my rugby club, actually, if I'm quite high up in things. In fact, I supposed to be on the WIU website registering new players tonight because we're restarting our youth team. But the thing is, in the past with the regions, they've had money, right? Mm. Back in the early days, you had the Galacticos down the Ospreys.
Yeah. And,
there was still money, benefactor money being pumped into Cardiff. And they were signing names as big as anyone else in Europe.
There was money at the Dragons for a season.
Yeah. And they all ended up skint.
Yeah.
So why, from my point of view, why... I mean, they're definitely going to have, I'm not disputing the fact, they're definitely going to have money off the WIU to be able to be competitive in competition. But why we think business people who've been benefactors in the past, what was his name at the Ospreys? Demolition guy?
Cuddy.
Cuddy. I think he's in poor health now, and that's why he's pulled out the rugby. But they... by all means, pump your money in, but that doesn't mean you know anything about rugby. You know, you're a big fan of rugby, obviously, or he wouldn't put his money in your mouth is. But it doesn't mean, because you've got cash in the bank, that you're going to be able to run it well and turn it into a highly competitive European Cup later stages team. It's just, you know, in that era, Ospreys were, and there were times where they should have gone a lot further than they did. But it was at the expense of their bank balance,
which is
shedding money all over the place. So I just, like the Ospreys signing of the Manchester City executive guy, that is a good sign for me. Not that he's a rugby knowledge guy, but he's a business knowledge guy or sports business knowledge guy. He is someone that I wouldn't object to being given money by the WIU. But in other eras of regional rugby, they've just pissed it up a wall, for want of a better term. So, look, I am not going to say that something's got to change in terms of the salary budgets for the regions. Otherwise, they just can't be competitive. Kicking them and saying, you know, that they don't represent certain areas of the country is all very well.
That's done.
If they haven't got the money, it doesn't matter who they represent. If they haven't got the money, they haven't got the money. It's a money business, whatever way you coat it. If you can't, you haven't got the cash, you can't be competitive. Simple as that.
Yeah.
Jed, surely the regions are grossly underfunded, aren't they?
Yeah, I think they are. I think there is a there's definitely an argument to say that they're not, not properly reimbursed for, and they certainly haven't been in the past, properly reimbursed for the players that they're providing to the national side. And that's the thing that is working in all of this, right? If you look at it from a top-down level, right, is the players coming through to play for Wales are bloody good. And we have seen, you know, particularly in the last 12, 13 years, we've seen just loads of truly quality players come through regional rugby and play for Wales, but they've not had a sniff of any real success at, the odd league season aside at the regional level. And the question is, you know, what's the incentive for the WRU to do it? Now, I agree. I would like to see, a fairer reimbursement. But at the same time, I reckon they're sat there thinking, well, this is working for us. Do we want to be like the Irish Rugby Union, where we pay massive sums of money to the, and own the provinces, and they play and they have huge success, but the national side has probably underperformed considering that success. I don't know, you know, the WRU doesn't have that kind of money to go down the Irish route. Wales doesn't have that kind of economy to look at it. So I don't see it happening, to be honest. I think I agree with Murph. The interesting thing here is what's going on at the Ospreys, because they've gone in the space of 2 years from almost being folded by the WRU or whoever in that supposed, that kind of supposed merger with the Scarlets. They've gone from that situation to having some private investment come in from someone who's got some serious money. But I think the encouraging thing is this time it's not been a series of Galactico signings, because when we had, when you had Cuddy, you had all those players that we know, and it was big fanfare. Phillips comes from Cardiff, and Ian Gough, all these transfers within Wales. Then you had the Hollers and Jerry Collins and all these kind of players. What I think is going on at the Ospreys is stuff they've put that framework in place off the field, and God knows it needed it, because 18 months ago they were laughing stock with all the rubbish that was going on off the field. Do you remember, Dan? We did a pod about, I seem to think we were sat in a McDonald's in Clapham chatting about this, and they'd sent Hookie and someone else to a press conference the day after. Yeah. It was just a mess, you know, and now they seem to have a structure that really works. Bringing in that Man City guy is a very interesting move. I think the role that Mike Ruddock has done has kind of basically has drummed them into a bit of shape and said, look, if you want to behave like a professional rugby club, you've got to get your act in place off the field. And whether that's your finances or it's the player pathway. And I think they've looked at a lot of things, and they're starting to get it right. And now you're starting to see a few marquee players coming in. Jack Morgan's a bit of a statement of intent. But again, it's not a 32-year-old, 70 caps for South Africa, All Black. You know, it's a guy who could be a real star for them for a number of years. So I'm intrigued by how they're getting on. You know, the Dragons scrimping and saving to try and keep things rolling. Scarlets, we've already kind of covered on this. And then Cardiff, who knows what's gonna happen next? But yeah, look, I would like to see more money. I think the realistic thing is money has got to come in from elsewhere. I don't think it's gonna come from the WRU. I just don't see it happening. And I think that, you know, we always come back on this podcast to CVC and the role that they do. If there is some kind of revolutionary, upstarting with how the league system works and the Welsh sides can get out of the Pro 14, then I think that would put them in much better nick. But but also Greg's question about the separation of pro and amateur rugby, yes, they're not the same thing. You don't play 10 years of amateur rugby and come through and then go on and get a move to Newbridge and then get a move to the Dragons. It doesn't really work like that anymore. You go through the academy system. So it doesn't make, you know, I don't want to see community clubs getting a short end of the deal. I just think it's a completely different entity to what pro rugby is.
Well, look at the clubs that make up the union all had a vote on who was going to be the new chairman or something.
Yeah.
I'm not dissing the guy, but we've ended up with a former school teacher or something, is he? He might be brilliant. He comes across quite well, actually. But is that, I don't know. Is that how we need to select it? And what does he actually do? Like the chief exec of the WIU does all the work, doesn't he? So are we electing a figurehead? And you remember when you see the old boys talking about, you know, the 70s guys, what about when the Welsh team was selected by committee?
Yeah.
A committee was selecting the Welsh team. And then they would get together on Friday afternoon, have a run out, film on Friday night, then play England away. That was our rugby unit. And that what I was saying then about people voting for the chairman of WIU, that seems like it harks back to those days.
It does.
When it was all fags and fry-ups before the game. That kind of era. That's what it feels like, doesn't it? When you've got clubs like mine who are, you know, old men at table in fairness, and then tiny little clubs who you know, I don't pick out names, but they've never been very high up any division anywhere. And they got say over who is in charge of the whole bloody thing. It feels like crusty old guys in, well, it's a little bit of Will Carlin's 57 old farts thing, isn't it? But I hate politics in rugby, and let's move on.
Yeah, Jed, the Ospreys is really exciting, isn't it? Really interesting to see what happens there, because I think that appointment with the Man City guy, he's obviously, he can see something there, can't he? They've got a plan, and a big part of it's got to be marketing there, doesn't it?
And the guy who is running the show is a marketing, that's where he's made his money. And why can I never remember his bloody name? I'm gonna have to Google it.
It's why.
Yeah, Yendall Jones or something like that, isn't it?
Brand is like Y2, wasn't it? Or
yeah, it is. And I think the other thing we didn't mention when we were talking about that, I mentioned Mike Ruddock. The other thing with regards to it, I think Toby Booth's been an inspired choice as head coach, actually. Like, they just, I know they lost that game, they should have won it. And actually, they had enough experience on the pitch, which maybe Cardiff didn't have. You know, they had Alan Wynne-Jones and Tipperick on the pitch. You know, you'd have hoped there was enough in there to get them over the line. But it's, but generally, I do think they're moving in the right direction.
Oh, he's done a brilliant, hasn't he?
I think he has. Well, I think they look good. And I think they're probably an outside half away from being, you know, from having a really good league season next year. I think that they're, you know, they're still, you know, Myler's come in and done a brilliant job and been a really good steady 10, know exactly what you're going to get. But after that, you know, it's a problem, and God knows when Anscombe's going to play again. So I do think they're a 10 short, but they're moving in the right direction for me. But yeah, you're absolutely right. The kind of the marketing of it, and you know, it's kind of my day job as well, but marketing only does so much, because if you've got a crap product, there's only so much you can do with marketing to paper over the cracks, if you see what I mean. So I think they're addressing both things. You know, the product is getting, you could be the best marketeer in the world, but you're not going to get anyone to go and watch the Southern Kings or, you know, or a side like that who's getting whipped every week. So it's got to be, yes, there's marketing, but you've also got to make sure that your product stands up. They've got an interesting model. I think they're going to invest, but they're not just investing in 3-year deals for players. I think they want to invest in turning it into a business that can actually show some returns. Because if you just, you know, if you just chuck a load of money at players, and that's the only area where you're investing, it comes unstuck. You know, we saw it first time round at the Ospreys. You see it at clubs like Harlequins as well. You know, that it doesn't buy you success just by getting. You could have a much bigger playing budget and still have no success. So I think what I've been impressed with there is everything, you know, this whole kind of root and branch, let's get the whole house in order. And like I said, it really needed it.
Yeah, I think that's the one to watch. There's loads of lateral thinking going on, isn't there? Lots off the pitch, lots on the pitch. And, you know, if we look at the on the pitch for the moment, you know, with the outside half signings in the Welsh region, if you've got an old head in the squad that's going to be there or thereabouts, you're gonna win a number of games that that you end up losing. And you, I think that's true for, you know, for a lot of the Welsh regions, really. They need old heads in the side that they can turn to when you need either to see out a game or you need some experience at, like, when it really starts to get a bit of a squeeze on. And, you know, this weekend shows, doesn't it, that, you know, a lot of the Welsh sides were 15, 20 points up, and you just think if there was some experience on there, maybe that would have been a little bit different. I know that cut links into funding as well, but you can make some clever signings. But I think more often than not, the regions have made really, really poor ones.
Yeah, definitely. I think, it varies from region to region, doesn't it? Yeah, we've said before how the Scarlets have managed over the course of 10 years or so to unearth players who have just slipped through the net. And, you know, the Tyke Burns and the Jake Balls and the Asquiths and even people like Ed Kennedy, you know, they're not going to break the budget, but they will get you through a league season. And I think that's the thing that I think is frustrating, is because budgets are so tight, you have to have really good scouting and make really good wise recruitments, and that's not always the case.
I mean, this is all part of, like, the player agent system. You know, if a agent's got a top quality player from Southern Hemisphere or wherever, he doesn't come here. He doesn't come here inquiring over who wants to employ him. He goes to France or he goes to England and says, "I've got this player and I'm looking for this much money." He knows that money is not of it. Like, I think I can speak fairly accurately about Willis Halaholo. Willis Halaholo had that kind of tearaway lifestyle he was living as a young man. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been at Cardiff. Because his ability, I think he was in the really successful Hurricane side, was it? And because of his background, the big money wasn't going to come for him in France, I think. And so his agent came to Cardiff, and that's why he ended up Cardiff 5 seasons ago. And obviously he's knuckled down and become a fine player, and he's an international player now. But, like, top flight players are not going to get offered here because the agents know the Welsh regions can't afford them anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I mean about getting the off-pitch stuff in order as well, is it's as important, if not more important, for the regions to have. I'm going to stop calling them regions as well now, because, like, I'm sick of this stuff. But that's why, as clubs, right, you have to have someone who's gonna unearth gems for you, because you haven't got that large amount of money, so you can't go and buy a massive South African second row top dollar, because they'll be done. You've got to unearth someone who's coming through the ranks or has a bit of an odd story, but they're out there. They are. It's hard, but those players are out there. And I don't know who it was at the Scarlets who's unearthing these players, but that's what you need. You need someone who's able to think outside the box and do it, because you can't rely on the players you're getting offered, because it's just not going to work, and we've seen that.
Yeah, totally. So, bit of positivity then, coming back to the clubs, regions, whatever we want to call them. There's some exciting stuff off the field happening at the Ospreys. Yeah, same at the Dragons.
Look, the Dragons need to go back to private ownership as quick as they can, really. And again, I don't know. I think that's, Buttress has said that's the desire.
Buttress, he's, you know, he's up for it, isn't he?
Yeah, that's what he wants. And I think that's, you know, that's the case. But again, you know, I mean, it's encouraging on the pitch. And again, I think Dean Ryan's been a great appointment. You know, the form recently since that awful game at Zebra has been really good. But God, there's a long way to go with off the field stuff there. The reason the Ospreys have been able to move things along is because the new injection of cash has enabled them to do it. You know, it's not like that's why you can bring in a guy from Man City rather than a retired school teacher. It's that's the thing that you don't have at the Dragons. You've got the lowest playing budget. You've got, again, the pitch, it's just not sustainable having three. I know even Newport RFC aren't obviously playing on it at the moment, but you just can't have that much sport on a pitch that's right next to the USK. It just doesn't work, you know. Like, it was really good that they played at the Millennium for a few games, because I think it really benefited them having a good surface, because they're not. We've seen that they're a good side of ball in hand, actually, much better than I thought they were. And So there's all kinds of stuff that needs to get sorted. You know, you've got to sort the pitch out. You've got to sort out. You've got to sort out the whole commercial structure. How do you bring in new, you know, new sponsors if you're the Dragons? Because it's, you know, you're a side who's going to finish fourth or fifth or sixth in the joke league. So it's really, really difficult. They need to sort out that. They need to get sold. And it needs to get sold to someone who can see the potential. But I think it is there. Like the thing that's always been there is the kids who come through the system are brilliant. There is really good young talent in Gwent, and we know that. And whether that's Elliot D, Aaron Wainwright, or before that, Toby and the likes, we know that there are quality players there. But someone's going to have to be able to spot the potential. And like Murph says, you've got to be a... You know, you got to treat it like a genuine business.
Yeah, you have. I just think some of the off the field, you know, Buttress is a good guy. You know, Ospreys have made some good moves. Scarlets have got a good chief exec as well, haven't they? And the Blues have made some signings. So I think, you know, hopefully we'll see some change. And the games were good, weren't they? So anyway, moving on. Ashley Thomas. As wants to ask this question: should we still enter a ladies' team into international competitions if they're not supported financially by the WRU to the same degree as other rugby unions globally? This has obviously come after France have pumped our ladies 53-0.
This is news to me. I didn't know they were underfunding the team. It doesn't surprise me that anything's been underfunded at the moment, mind, because the WRU are in a massive hole financially. Moving forward, they'll have to put on a level playing field with the other teams if they want to. I mean, they don't shy away from funding the men's team. They got all the latest at the training base. They got all the latest equipment like altitude chambers and all sorts going on. I don't know if the ladies get to train on that facility as well, but. Yeah, it's news to me, so I'll have to hand over to the resident politics guy, Jed Carly Priest.
obviously, first off, you know, I don't follow the women's game particularly closely, but England and France have a professional setup, and so of course they're going to hammer us. That's what you'd expect, I think, really. And again, until you're able to level that up and be able to, I think we had the case where the coach or one of the coaches walked out the day before the tournament began as well, or the week before the tournament began. So there's obviously something that's really not right there. It comes down to whether the WRU see there as being growth in the women's game. And I think you'd be mad not to, actually, because it is, you know, participation-wise, it's growing a lot. Certainly it is in England. And there's no reason to think why that couldn't be the case in Wales as well. If you get that participation from bottom grassroots level up, then you can produce quality players. And then it comes down to whether you're prepared to put the money into the elite level. But I think, you know, yeah, Murph's right. They're in a hole. But I don't think that excuses the fact that that they should be taking the women's game seriously. Because, again, thinking with a business hat on, it's an area that's definitely got opportunity to grow. You know, if there was a good if Wales were challenging for a Grand Slam in the women's game. Then, we've seen it with women's football, right? We've seen, seen fantastic crowds there for that game at Rodney, whenever it was, 2-3 years ago, World Cup qualifier against England. And you've seen that there is a women's, these traditional men's sports, right, like football and rugby and cricket and stuff, are growing massively in the women's and the ladies and the girls sections, because they've been completely ignored. But I think there's a lot more people feel more comfortable playing it now and have an opportunity to play it. And again, if you're smart about it, you can think there must be the opportunity to have that at the very top of the game, because there's been nothing, you know, there for years and years and years, there was no money in women's rugby, women's cricket, women's football, and you just need to look at football and see how it's grown and think there is that job to be done in rugby. So again, it would be very short sighted of the WAU to not invest in the women's game. Doesn't mean they're going to.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Women's rugby is the only growth part of rugby union at the moment.
Well, I think so. I mean, yeah. Broadly speaking, yeah, I think that's the right thing to assume. Yeah.
My club, we're trying to get our ladies set up going now, because I think anyone club-wise who isn't paying some attention to women's rugby is going to fall behind, because it is the growth part of the sport. So, yeah, we're going to institute an under-16s, I think, hopefully. Obviously, this is all pandemic allowing, but I think you've got to. I think there's been a lot of it covered lately, various documentaries where soccer was, the FA banned women's soccer for a long time until about 1970 something.
It's a lot later than you think, isn't it?
You couldn't actually play the sport if you were a female until the 70s legally. And it's been ignored. I mean, there's a lot of people, in fairness, my dad, but then he's in his 90s, so I can, you know, he gets a pass. He complains about the number of girls who are doing commentary these days because he just, you know, he's obviously a dinosaur and behind the times, but the change is very necessary. They've been ignored in sport for decades, and, you know, women's sport is being ignored, and also including women in the showpiece events has been overlooked as well. So I'm very keen for my club to get going on that side of things.
Yeah, exactly. And you only need to look at the sports which haven't been ignored by the media. You know, you look at women's tennis, which generally speaking has always, you know, it's always had pretty similar coverage to the men's, certainly around the Grand Slams and stuff. And that, you know, the money is there. The money's there from sponsors. The money's there from tournament organisers. Same goes for athletics, track and field, right? It's always been, no one's ever looked down their nose at women's athletics. But I don't know. I think, you know, a lot of it stems from football. But again, I think the encouraging thing is you've seen the growth there, and it's, you know, it's massive now. And the audience figures do really big numbers. And I tell you one thing, right? The deal that the Women's Super League, the women's version of the Premier League, has just struck with Sky and the BBC, I think any tournament organiser from any sport in the UK would be desperate to strike. They've got Sky covering virtually every game across the course of the season, and they've got BBC doing like 24 games for them. So they've got BBC to do all the big exposure, act as like your shop window, your advert for the game, and cover that on BBC One and BBC Two. And then you've got the iPlayer doing highlights and stuff. Gives you so much more visibility, right? So people can actually see the sport and see it. And again, you know, whether you're a 7-year-old girl, an 8-year-old boy, 50-year-old bloke, you know, sticking it on and going, do you know what? I watched that Man City versus Chelsea women the other day. It was brilliant. And I'm gonna watch more of it. You know, that's the kind of deal I think any chief exec would love. I mean, God, can you imagine the Pro 14 striking up a deal like that? There's talk we're going to end up on bloody Premier Sports again. So, you know, there's a lot to be seen that is going right in women's football that would lead you to think that there's the opportunity to do that in women's rugby. Although, yeah, like I said, I'm not an expert.
Yeah. No, interesting. It does seem very short-sighted, doesn't it, if we are underfunding, because I think it'll... You know, the marketability of the actual game, you can make a clever sort of sideways move, can't you, through the women's game? And plus, it should be done, shouldn't it? It's just the right thing to do as well. And I think a lot of the clubs that have got really strong women's setups, especially at the amateur level as well, have actually got stronger men's sides as well from it. So it's all cyclical, isn't it? It all links in.
It's on a purely base level, it's good business as well. Yeah. You put people through your clubhouse all the time. You know, there was a time my club used to run six sides or something, five or six senior men's sides. Obviously, participation levels are nowhere near that, supporting that anymore. So from a business point of view, You want to get as many teams, we want to get as many teams playing as possible. And if that means we've got three ladies' sides, I'm happy. Women's sides. Ah, see? Alan Partridge.
Okay, so yeah, Reese Knott.
I haven't seen this one, and the minute I hear Reese Knott, I know this is gonna be a wind up.
Reese, yeah. Yeah, are the Welsh regions focused on the big prize of the Rainbow Cup?
Oh, I did see that one actually, yeah. Go on, Murph.
Does anyone know the date of it starting?
Yeah, I had to look prior to coming on. I think it's the 24th of April, I think.
Okay, that's not too far. All right. Well, you said earlier they need to have a good Rainbow Cup to, you know, kind of save their season or whatever, but they're all playing each other. It looks like it starts with derbies. That suggests that at least two of them are going to be out on their backsides in no time at all before they get to play any South African sides or any other team. So I don't know what kind of, it's a conference or league format or cup format.
It's the worst. I think the
conference, is it?
It's two conferences, top one side in each plays each other in the final. So
that's right, yeah.
So okay, we know Leinster will be one of them, and then
but we're all starting with derbies.
Yeah.
So you know we pretty much know most of where they stand in derbies. Not always, but most of the time we want to see them playing against unfamiliar. I suppose we want to see them playing the Bulls and all the other the Sharks and all that. But will they even get that far? Or you know, will they? How many of them will they actually play? Yeah, it's. I mean, like we've covered already, it's difficult to get that excited.
Should we finish? On this one, just because you got a little bit of time to go? Like I said earlier, I think there seems to be a lot better chance of getting a couple of games away in the summer for Wales. So potentially while the Lions are away or around that period of time. Again, we touched on a bit of this last week. If you were picking a side, let's say, to face Japan are over here for a Lions game. Let's say they stick around for a test or two against Wales. Should we have a stab at picking a side for that? If that was tomorrow, Wales versus Japan.
This is minus who we think is going to be on the Lions.
Minus who we think will be on the Lions tour. Dan, you fancy a stab at that?
Yeah, go on, and let's run through that then.
You want to start up front? Yes, is the answer to that. what about loose head prop? I think it's safe to assume, or let's say for this that Wynn Jones is going to be in the mix with the Lions. He might be. It's going to be a tight call, that one. But let's say he is. Who would play loose head prop for you? Either of you can tackle that.
Well, I mean, there was more than one guy throughout the Six Nations covered. Loose head on the bench, so you're just gonna. I mean, both of those would make the squad. Nicky Smith, and who else did it? Reece Carey on one occasion, and there was someone else as well whose name forgets me. Who's
Rodri Jones, isn't it?
Rodri Jones, yeah. I'd probably go for the other two myself, that's my preference. Obviously, on those tours, you're looking at some of the youngsters who are knocking about, but I don't know.
But you want a solid foundation, don't you? I think you've got to go for a bit of experience in the front five. I'd be looking at Nicky Smith for that one personally.
Yeah, Nicky. Oh, no.
All right, hooker. Let's assume Ken is off with the Lions.
Well, personally, I know he hasn't commanded his position in the Ospreys team. I want someone to have at least a good look at Derry Lake.
I mean, there's so many bloody hookers there, though, isn't there, at the Ospreys?
Yeah. And I mean, there's still, you know, there's still Ryan Elias, Elliot D. But none of them seem like they're going to be, which one of, say, if Ken comes back from the Lions tour and retires, who do you think is going to cement their place in the Welsh team?
I mean, based on the autumn when Ken wasn't there, no one had a good enough game to say that position is going to be theirs. I still think there's more improvement on Elliot. I know I'm a bit biased because he was the first player we ever had do an interview with us on here, and he's a thoroughly nice bloke. But I think I would like to see him get a run get a run with two on his back rather than just 16. And, you know, again, he's, I think, what is he, about 27, 28? So he's still got a good few years left in him. And obviously he's got a bag load of experience. So personally, I'd be looking at him. And if this was a game against Japan, which, you know, wouldn't be a, you know, it wouldn't be an easy game, I'd be looking at Elliot. What about you, Dan?
Yeah, I thought Elliot D, you know, came, you know, played well during the last tournament. But there's some good hookers sort of playing, aren't there? But yeah, Dewi Lake's unbelievable in the loose, isn't he, over the ball, but he can't throw in. Or his question marks always thrown in. And then is it Evan Phillips?
Evan Phillips is the one I think's got a hell of a lot about him, yeah.
Yeah, I quite fancy, I'd like to see him given some game time. I mean, they play him in the back row quite a bit, don't they? Just because there's a lot of hookers there with Scott as well. So, but I'd like to see him get a run out.
Yeah, I mean, there's just there are just too many hookers at the Ospreys to get for all of them to get decent game time. And I don't know, again, if I was in charge of the Dragons, I'd be sniffing around one of them and taking him on a year loan next season. Because again, you know, we've been reliant on, you know, on Richard Hibbard, who's 37, 38 years old. Elliot's always, you know, he's off with the national side a lot of the time. And then you've got Ellis Shipp, who's a lot younger. And so, you know, having someone another first team quality hooker would be beneficial. Well, that's another story for another time. Yeah, I think Evan Phillips would be someone you could put on a bench in an international tomorrow, and he'd come on and would really show his mettle.
Yeah. So okay, we're going with him, are we? Just for a bit of fun.
I wouldn't start him, but I'd have him on the bench. I don't know. Murph, you know a hell of a lot more about forward play than we do. Who would you pick at hooker? And you can have a casting vote.
Well, I was just going to say that when Ken goes, I think we could have a period of high turnover at that position in the national team, which is not always a negative, because whoever gets the not to play is going to go flat out knowing that he might be his only chance, or he could be out again quite soon. So I personally, look, you're going to pick certain kind of established players with a few caps, and also you're going to pick in certain positions players you're going to develop. And I would go for this one as a development thing. As a you know about Elliot D, and you know about Ryan Elias. So I would go for a development case in this situation. That would be Evan Phillips and Dewi Lake.
All right, fair enough. I like that. This is why you don't pick a side by committee, isn't it? Like we were saying earlier.
Yeah, I mean, anything by committee if you can help me.
Tight head again. Tom Francis will be in the mix, you would think, for the Lions, or in there. Oh, it's gonna be tough. Anyway, let's assume he's out of the equation. Who comes in at tight head in this side?
I don't think Thomas Francis will be out of the equation, but I don't think they take him.
Yeah,
it's more likely, because I think there's quite a few tight heads up the pecking order ahead of.
I do, but you're only one injury or one HIA away from getting on the.
I can't see any point after a long season of international rugby and domestic. I can't see any point in taking him to Japan or wherever we're going to go. So, me personally, I think we've got two props who fit the bill of international sized front rowers in Leon. I nearly called him the wrong name, Leon Brown, and Rhys Carey. And I'd like to see those two developed as our long term. So Leon would be my three for this tour.
Oh, yeah, I 100% agree with that.
Yeah, I go Leon Brown as well. I thought he did well during the last campaign, didn't he, in the Six Nations? And there's a lot more to come from him.
Well, back in the row. Oh, sorry, go on then, Murph.
I agree. I think he's only they've got his weight up and different things, and he's had quite a couple of, what was it? Must be three seasons where he's been involved with the Welsh squad. And I think he's ready to see his reach his potential anyway. He still doesn't do that many minutes for the Dragons.
No, I mean, again, but so often he'll be coming straight out of a Wales camp back in. So he's either sat on the bench, coming off the bench. But you're right, he doesn't do that. And ditto, Reece Carey. I can't remember the last time I saw Reece Carey with one on his back. He must have more starts for Wales as a loose head than he does for Cardiff.
I've got no idea why, but Corey Domachowski is playing well, so maybe they're just going continuity. But I can't, when it comes to Reece Carey and being in international, I probably said this before, but iron sharpens iron. I think definitely said that before. And if he's not doing the hard graft at domestic level, he's not going to grow into the hard graft of international. So I don't know. I honestly don't know what everyone's waiting for in terms of his selection for the Blues. I don't know. No idea.
Yeah, agreed.
We were talking about tight ends. We were.
That's right. Yeah, we got. Well, yeah. So I think we're all happy with Leon Brown at three. Yeah. What about in the row?
That's tricky because we're losing. I mean, will Rowlands want to go after the season he's had?
I don't think it's necessarily the best move to take him.
No,
I think if he's had a long slog of a season.
So, like as a partnership, are you looking to take one senior and one development, or?
I'd like development. I would.
And who would you say there? Ben Carter, too young.
No, get him out there. He's the business.
Is he still qualified for the under 20s?
Oh, he might be. I think he's either 19 or 20. Yeah.
Yeah.
He should still go there, I think. Ben Carter. I really like Seb Davis. I don't know whether it's a sort of romantic side because he's a ball playing second row, but if he can get the nuts and bolts of. Yeah, the nitty gritty. He's got so much, isn't he? He's got so much going for him, but he just needs to get his head down. I'd love to see him come through because he could be fantastic. But for me, Seb Davis, you know, that he needs to be believed in. But I also know he's got to help himself as well, hasn't he?
Well, he has bulked up over the last couple of years. So I've never paid attention to what side of the scrum they put him on. I think he must be on the loose head side of the scrum. But
I think he is.
He's a lump of a bloke. There's no reason why he can't do the tight work. But there's probably someone we're missing. A
couple of boys of the Ospreys.
I mean, Reece Davis, I think, has had a very good season. And he's pure grunt, isn't he? I think Adam Beard... It's not outrageous to say he might sneak onto the plane with the Lions. I don't think he will, but again, it's whether you want to keep him playing because he's been playing really well. But again, he's had a long season because he played all through the autumn when he wasn't in the Welsh side. So yeah, obviously he's in and around the mix. Matthew Screech is an certainly a tour like this you could look at and say he'd get a job done for you. And again, I think he's one of those late developers who he's certainly finding his potential later on in his career. But he's got a very similar career path to Corey, where he's had a bit of a wobble after being a really good under-20s player, joined the Dragons, had a good, rediscovered his form. And then, I think he's a really good, gritty second rower.
A couple of good second rows down the Scarlets as well.
I was just going to say, you could argue they've had a look at Seb Davis already.
Yeah.
And so people like Reece Davis and some of the youngsters at the Scarlets might be a better shout.
All right, then. Yeah. Let's plump for someone. Murph, again, over to you.
Well, Ben Carter plus your choice.
All right. I think Carter and Reece Davis I like the look of together.
Who's the youngsters? Do you have anyone in mind at the Scarlets then, Dan?
His name's mistaken me. I mentioned him.
You did, Morgan.
What's his? Yeah, we need to get Google up.
I want to say it's Morgan Evans.
No, I don't think it is, but Morgan something. But he's a quality second row. I'd be very happy with him in the mix. Yes, but Murphy, you make a good point on Seb Davis. Really has been given a chance, so you know maybe.
It's not so much that they're discounting him. It's just they've seen him. He's got a few caps already, and depends how. Like, if you're going to take a wise head to go alongside a young head, you probably wouldn't go for Seb. You'd go for Corey. So, it depends how much of a development tour this imaginary tour is going to be. I think we need to make up our minds how much development this is.
It's Morgan Jones, by the way, we should say.
Morgan Jones, that's it. Yeah, really, really good player.
Listen, he's going to get more game time next year because Jake Ball's going. And he's going to probably get his chance next season anyway.
Yeah. I'd never pick this second row partnership, but yeah, I do like the sound of Ben Carter and Reese Davis. But you'd have to have Corey Hill or someone in there, wouldn't you? Otherwise, we'd be.
I think if it's Japan, you probably would, and you'd have Corey Hill in there, and Corey Hill probably skipper in the side as well, wouldn't you?
You would.
Yeah.
But we're going Reese Davis, so because this is a fantasy.
Yeah, go on then. All right, back row.
Oh, this is hard.
It is hard. Again, I think, you know, obviously, we haven't even spoken about Navidi going off injured. Like, I can't even bring myself to think of it. I'll be gutted if he misses the Lions. Because, I mean, he's going. There's no way in hell you wouldn't take him unless you're mad. Obviously, Toby will be going. I imagine Tips will be going. I know there's not that many places, but they're all just that good.
Actually, the only one, it depends what Gatland's got in mind in terms of style of play. The only one I would say that could be over is Tips, because you're going to be tackling Evan Etzebeth all day, and you know, other giants, Malherbe and the other guys they got knocking around there. So, it's Peter Steph Dutoy, for God's sake. He seems like he's the tallest player in rugby union, and he's playing blindside. So, Tips might be the one that could get overlooked, only because you've got people like
Underhill,
Hamish Watson. I mean, would you pick? I'm not sure that there's any loose head, open side you'd pick over Hamish Watson at the moment for the Lions. So.
Not on form.
No. Yeah. So Tips is the one. Yeah. And again, he might just go because of previous experience on tour.
Yeah, and he never misses a tackle, although he did on Saturday. I think it's the first time I've ever seen it. But
they're just going to be the hardest defensive work anyone's. Yeah. I think if the box turn up in World Cup form, it's going to be the hardest defensive job that anyone's had as a Lions for a long time. So
right, either way, you wouldn't take Tips on a development tour. Or, you know, even it's a development tour. You give him some time off. So assuming the first choice are out the way, I still think you go for a bit of experience in there. I think you need. I'd be tempted to look at Wainwright at eight again.
Yeah.
With possibly Morgan Morris on the bench, or you know, again in and around the squad. But yeah, I think he needs a bit more time at international level at eight. So I'll be looking at him there.
Jack Morgan's probably going to get looked at. There's an opportunity to bring Ellis Jenkins back in the fold.
Yeah, that's true. And Ross
Moriarty probably won't go on the Lions tour. Or would you take him on the Wales tour? It's impossible. The permutations are endless, I think.
It just depends on whether you want to say to Ellis, right, that's good. You've had 5-6 games at the end of the season under your belt. Go away and rest up for the next season. Or you want to keep him, you want to keep him playing. My gut says it's the former, to be honest. But with Moriarty, I don't know. It's tricky. Again, you know, he's not really played that much, and then again, he's played a lot since he's come back.
And if you're going the development side of it, you've got Shane Lewis Hughes, and then the current backup open side based on fitness is James Botham. So
maybe you should do that, really, rather than looking at players. Again, you know what you're getting with Moriarty. You know what you're getting with Ellis Jenkins, which is players who are both.
He could go as captain, like he did could. In the past. Yeah. So that's and again, there's probably too soon for Carwin down West Wales. Carwin to Woodbury.
God, we've got about three different back row options. They all look really different, don't they?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to take the reins on this one. I think you go Shane Lewis-Hughes, Jim Botham, and Aaron Wainwright.
Can't argue.
Not bad, is it?
No.
Back, Stan, there you go. Lloyd Williams at nine.
Of course. Of course. Right.
It's so hard to second guess who'd be on the Lions tour.
I know. Yeah. Is Thomas going?
I don't think so. I think if any of them go, it'll be Gareth Davis.
Yeah. Warburton's picked him, isn't he? As his starting nine.
I don't see him touring personally. I don't think he's played enough international rugby to get on the tour.
There's a really big call to be made by Warren Gatland when it comes to Ben Youngs. If he kind of bows to the expectation and takes Ben Youngs, then there's no room for Thomas, I don't think.
Mm.
But if he doesn't, like Conor Murray would probably be the, based on the form that he's found in the last sort of 3-4 weeks.
Yeah.
And then if you're not taking Ben Youngs, then you're going to look at Ali Price plus a Welsh guy.
Yeah. Again, we can't get into the Lions too much now because we're supposed to be wrapping this side up. But I agree.
But it affects our selection.
It does. All right. Let us assume then, I've just had this text from Warren Gatland that says that both Gareth and Thomas are out of action. Let's work on that basis.
Well, our first choice from the start of the tournament. Oh my God, he got injured.
Hardy.
Kieran Hardy.
If he's fit again, I would take him. I mean,
I think you do, don't you?
He's the youngest of our current. Yeah.
You pick him, and you pick Sheedy alongside him, don't you?
Yeah, and probably Reuben Morgan Williams as cover.
Yeah,
nice. Like that.
That's a nice. Yeah, nice halfbacks. Get him a bit more time at test level. Centres. Kieran Williams needs a cap, I think. I like him a lot. I think there's more to come from him.
I will say he got a little bit lined up by Newcastle on the weekend.
Yeah, he did.
That's not necessarily his fault because it's the way they've used him in the backs.
Mm.
And I think at the moment, you only have to watch about 30 seconds of his highlight reel to see exactly what he's going to do nearly every time he gets the ball. And not just his highlight reel, but probably if you analyse the Ospreys for more than 5 minutes, you'll see exactly what they do with Kieran Williams every time. And I think for the long-term sake of his career, there needs to be more done with him than what they're doing at the moment. But yes, absolutely, on the tour. now I've assassinated his style of play. I think it should go.
What about Cardiff 10 or 12.
Ben Thomas,
yeah. Ball playing 12. Massive call that, but I'd love to see him outside outside Edie or Jared.
If his outside half play comes on, he's brilliant cover for a 23 in the squad because he's 10 and centre he's covering because he's played outside centre as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
So I just think he needs more regional rugby myself.
Yeah, I do as well. I'd be more tempted actually to get Owen Watkins, I think has found some form again. And I think I'd be tempted to build on that. We said it before, like defensively, I think he offers you the threat of a turnover with those strip tackles. So I'd be tempted to look at him.
A bit of experience in the side.
And a bit of experience, yeah. I that's what I'd be looking at. Who am I missing?
Well, I tell you who probably do some game time in the Welsh setup is Willis Halaholo.
Yeah, that's a great shout, isn't it?
There's quite a few knocking around the squad who haven't actually got many caps, even though we're putting out slides with 900 or 1,000 caps in this 23 or starting 15. Within the wider squad, there's players who've only got a couple of caps, so well, it's Halaholo would probably be...
Halaholo and Watkin.
That's a good shout. Go with that. I'm happy with that.
So hang on. You've kicked out my mate Kieran.
Yeah, well, you're the one that shot his game to pieces there, mate.
well, Not his fault, in fairness.
In the squad, but you're right. I'd kind of forgotten, thinking, well, you know, we know what you're going to get from Willis, but he's, yeah, you're right. I think getting a bit more game time at international level is no bad thing. Right, wings and fullback to come. Right, Liam will be on the tour. Lewis Rees-Sammet will be on the tour.
Mm. Josh Adams arguably on the tour.
Which is your first choice back three. You don't take Halfpenny even if he's fit because De Guise is knackered.
Owen Lane.
Yeah, look, I think he.
Not fit though, is he?
No, he's not. But yeah, it's so tricky because I really want to see him at Test. And again, Ashley Hewitt's just picked up another knock because otherwise, I think he's banging there on form.
Yeah.
All right. Again, assume those two are out of it.
Well, there's a few. He's not a development guy by any means, but he covers lots of positions and has been in and around the Welsh squad. Is McNichol. And you could argue the same for Hallam Amos too. Bit of experience, covers the whole back three, and they're not available players.
I'm really not blown away by Hallam Amos's form in the last. So since he went to the Blues, to be honest, yeah. I've not been blown away by it. And
well, otherwise you're going for
Jonah Holmes. I would have in there ahead of Hallam Amos.
Fair dues.
I think he's one of those players who doesn't have enough caps. He's playing a blinder for the Dragons at the moment. I'd have him over Hallam Amos. Again,
I was thinking otherwise you're going to be turning to people like Prothero, which might be too soon for him.
I like him,
don't get me wrong, but I think
it depends who you're playing him alongside, doesn't it? I think you do need some experience in there. So I don't know. So I'd say I'd have Holmes in one of those positions, either 15 or 14. And then tricky, this, isn't it?
Yoan Lloyd
again, does it? I mean, he's a great player, isn't he? Doesn't have
much. I'm still not sure we know what position he is.
We can 15 Holmes on the wing, and
in which case you do probably need an Amos who's got a few more caps alongside him, don't you? Just to, particularly if he's playing, if you're playing him at fullback.
It's a beautifully inexperienced side.
This is exactly why fans shouldn't pick the side, isn't it?
Just to get sidelined by the Lions again. In the selection.
Murph, what are we going to talk about next week?
I'm not going to go too deep. Don't worry. But it's just something to think about for next week. Is we've gone across the backs and we haven't mentioned George North. So does that mean we think he's going to go on the Lions tour as a centre?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah, really do.
Yeah.
Possibly ahead of John Fox.
I definitely think he'd go ahead of John Fox. Mm-hmm. I just mean...
I actually think he's starting at the moment as well.
Like, I know... Listen, I'm not trying to jump the gun on next week, but is Tuilagi going to be fit before the summer?
He's never fit. He's never fit for very long. Even if he's fit, he'll get injured over there. He's a brilliant player.
He's the type of player you take anyway, though, isn't he?
Yeah, and I think Gatland would as well.
Like four games for Leicester and he's in.
That's famously,
That
Gatland picked John Fox and Jamie Roberts in that test where he dropped O'Driscoll. It's never mentioned that Manu Tuilagi was on the bench. You know, and that's how highly Gatland rates him. He is he's a demon of a player, but I just don't think he'll be fit.
So George is going on the tour. That's like the opener for next week. Then it's George is on the tour as a centre.
Discuss. That's it.
Discuss it. Discuss it next week.
Yes.
Not now, because we've got no rugby to talk about next week. Right. Let's finish this side because I can see Dan.
We did. Sorry.
All right. Let's go with that then. Let's go with Yoan Lloyd, 15, and Hallam Amos on the wing. Unless Ashton Hewitt's fit.
I think we've gone through that team and I feel like we've missed some really glaringly obvious youngsters.
Oh, we really?
I'm happy anyway. We'll text them to each other tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. Murph always does this. He'll always drop a text saying, I completely forgot about this.
Yeah.
But there we go. Right. But do tune in next week, because I think it's probably time to talk about the Lions, isn't it? So I think we should have a stab at either trying to second guess Gatland's side or at selecting our own. Either way will be fun. So make sure you don't miss that. If there's anything else you want us to talk about, send us a tweet at Attacking Scrum. A big thanks to Murph, a big thanks to Dan, and of course, a thanks as always to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. If you want to get some top quality coffee, you can do that over at socoffeetrades.co.uk. Right, we'll be back to talk rugby with you very, very soon.
Podcast Network.